This is the day, you know, when legend has it that St. Patrick was granted three wishes by the angel of the law. And the first, that on this day, the weather should always be fair so that the faithful could attend Mass. And second, that on every Thursday and Saturday, 12 Irish souls should be freed from the pains of hell. And third, that no outlander should ever rule over Ireland. And though I have not received the latest weather report, although I talked to the Irish ambassador this morning, he said the weather was fair and everybody went to church in Ireland. He said there was a little Irish mist, but otherwise everybody... And I have every reason to believe that the 12 Irishmen have been regularly released from the nether regions, as promised. In fact, Judge Nealon said, as we were trying to bring the people in from one room to the other, he said he thought he recognized some of them right here in this room. We need have no concern, however, over the third promise, for in Ireland they are celebrating this day in freedom and in liberty. But you and I know that life was not always this good for the Irish, either in the old country or here in the United States. There was, for example, that Black Day in February of 1847, when it was announced in the House of Commons that 15,000 Irish were dying every day of starvation. And you may recall that Queen Victoria was so overwhelmed with pity that she offered £5 for the Society of Irish Relief. And so the Irish left Ireland, and many of them came here to the United States. They left behind hearts and fields and a nation which was yearning to be free. And it's no wonder that James Joyce described the Atlantic as a bowl of bitter tears. And a poet sometime later wrote, "They are going, 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 and we cannot bid them stay." This country offered to them all great advantages, even then. But no one who is familiar with the story of the Irish here would underrate the difficulties they faced after landing in the United States. As the first of the racial minorities, our forefathers were subject to every kind of discrimination. But the Irish progressed. 40 years ago, my father left the city of Boston because of the signs that said, "No Irish need apply." And yet he's had two sons who were senators from the state of Massachusetts and one son who was president of the United States. So we have come and we did make progress in four short decades. But it was less than 9 months ago when President Kennedy was in touring Ireland. And he used to ask the crowds out in front of him how many of them had cousins or relatives in the United States, just as it is in the front of the program. And almost everybody, as you look across the audience, almost everybody raised their hand. And it was with great delight that he was able to reply, "I've seen them all, and they're doing well." He invited them all to the White House, too, I might say. When he was down in Wexford, he reminded the people in where we came from in Wexford that one of the first Irish families come there some years ago, wishing to impress their folks back home, had sent a card with a front of the picture of them standing out in front of the White House and said, "This is where we stay during the summer." And he said, I come from Wexford and this is my home in the winter too, and you're all invited." So it is my great delight to be with you tonight as we take a few moments to share the rich heritage of the Irish. It's worth noting, I think, that all the wealth of our legacy stems from a small island in the far Atlantic with a population one quarter the size of Pennsylvania. The Irish have survived persecution in their own land and discrimination in ours. They have emerged from the shadow of subjugation into the sunlight of personal liberty and national independence. And they have shared the struggles of freedom of more than a score of nations across the globe. Irish soldiers are en route tonight to help preserve the peace in Cyprus. Indeed, Ireland's chief export has been neither potatoes nor linen, but exiles and immigrants who have fought with sword and with pen for freedom around the earth. We need but recall the heroic deeds of the Wild Geese, the officers and soldiers forced to flee Ireland after the Battle of the Boyne. In fighting for the French, they broke the ranks of the English at Fontenoy. And fighting for the Spanish, they turned the tide of the battle against the Germans at Milazzo. And other Irishmen in other years, going into battle with the Union Army, a green sprig in their hats, bore the brunt of the hopeless struggle against the Confederate heights at Fredericksburg. 1,200 soldiers of the Irish Brigade went into action that bitterly cold December day in 1862, and only 280 survived, as President Kennedy noted last summer when he presented the brigade's battle-torn flag to the Irish people. Never were men so brave, General Robert E. Lee said of the Irish Brigade. And of themselves, the Irish soldiers said, "War-battered dogs are we, gnawing on a naked bone, fighters in every land and clime, for every cause but our own." Today, the Irish enjoy their freedom at a time when millions of people live in deprivation and despair under a totalitarian dictatorship stretching eastward from the wall in Berlin to the troubled borders of Vietnam. The free Irishmen marching everywhere to the tune of O'Donnell Abu and the wearing of the green are a dramatic contrast to the clattering of hobnail boots on darkened streets, the sound that marks the enslaved nations. So the first point I'd like to make arises from the traditional Irish concern for freedom everywhere. I know a few in our land, and none in this room, who would ignore threats to peace and freedom in far-off places. We realize, as John Boyle O'Reilly once wrote, and which my brother used to repeat, particularly at the time of having the difficulty over Berlin, "The world is large when its weary leagues to loving hearts divide, but the world is small when your enemy is loose on the other side." No problem weighs heavier on the conscience of free men than the fate of millions held in iron captivity. But what is taking place on the other side of the Iron Curtain should not be the only matter of concern to us who are committed to freedom. I would hope that none here would ignore the current struggle of some of our fellow citizens right here in the United States for their measure of freedom. In considering this, it may be helpful for us to recall some of the conditions that existed in Ireland from 1691 until well into the 19th century, which our forefathers fought against. We might remember, for instance, that no Irish Catholic could vote, could serve on a jury, could enter a university, could become a lawyer, could marry a Protestant. And our pride in the progress of the Irish is chilled by the tragic irony that it has not been progress for everyone. We know that it has not been progress for all, even here in our own country. It is ironic that in 1964, in the United States of America, the Department of Justice is devoting much of its time in securing these or comparable basic rights for some Americans to whom they are denied. There are Americans who, as the Irish did, still face discrimination in employment, sometimes open, sometimes hidden. There are cities in America today that are torn with strife over whether a Negro should be allowed to drive a garbage truck. And there are walls of silent conspiracy that block the progress of others because of race or creed without regard to ability. It is toward concern for these issues and vigorous participation on the side of freedom that our Irish heritage must impel us. If we are true to this heritage, we cannot stand aside. There are two other areas of concern which I feel are of paramount importance and to which Irish tradition speaks in ringing tones. One is the status of colonies, and second, our relationship to the developing nations of the world, and especially to our neighbors to the south. For nearly 20 years, we and our allies have striven to halt the communist advance. But one of the weaknesses in our common front has been the restraint on freedom sponsored by some of our allies and accepted by ourselves. The conduct of our foreign affairs should be consistently based on the recognition of every man's right to be economically and politically free. This is in the American tradition. We were, after all, the victor in our own war for independence. We gave self-determination to our own dependencies. And for more than a century, we opposed colonial exploitation anywhere. But throughout all this, we were still living largely in splendid isolation, removed from a direct control of a world destiny. This was changed by World War II. The frontiers of our national security became the frontiers of the world. We found ourselves obliged to deal with the harsh facts of existence on a global basis. For the sake of our own security, we found our destiny to be closely linked with that of nations that maintain large colonial empires on which they felt their ultimate security depended. Further, in some of the undeveloped countries, we have found our destiny linked with ruling powers or classes which hold the vast majority of their people in economic or military subjugation. It is easy for us to believe that the imperialism of the West was infinitely preferable to the tyranny of communism. But the hostility of the African and the Asian colonial nations have shown us that they do not all hold the same view. The bloody struggles for liberty, from the sands of Algeria to the steaming jungles of Indonesia and Vietnam, prove that others would make the same sacrifices to throw off the yoke of imperialism today that the Irish made a half a century ago. And we also have a long way to go in helping the people of some other nations to free themselves from economic domination. This is a part of our national policy, not only because it is humane, but because it is essential. Our future may depend on how well it is understood throughout the world, how well it is understood that we still champion the quality of freedom everywhere. As President Kennedy said, if a free society cannot help the many who are poor, it cannot save the few that are rich. I like to think, as did President Kennedy, that the emerald thread of freedom runs into the cloth that we weave today, that these policies in which we believe so strongly and which President Johnson is advancing are the current flowering of the Irish tradition. They are directed toward freedom for all Americans here and for all peoples throughout the world. And I like to think that these policies will survive and will continue as the cause of Irish freedom survived the death of the liberator, Owen Roe O'Neill. As you'll recall, O'Neill was one of the great figures of Irish history. It was of the period after his death when the entire Irish nation was overwhelmed with grief that the following lines were written. Sagest in the council was he, kindness in the hall. Sure, we never won a battle, 'twas Owen won them all. Soft as woman's was your voice, O'Neill, bright was your eye. Oh, why did you leave us, Owen? Why did you die? Your troubles are all over, you're at rest with God on high. But we're slaves and we're orphans, Owen, oh, why did you die? We're sheep without a shepherd, when the snow shuts out the sky. Oh, why did you leave us, Owen? Why did you die? So on this St. Patrick's evening, let us again recall the heritage of the Irish. Let us hold out our hands to those who struggle for freedom today, at home and abroad, as Ireland struggled for 1,000 years. And let us not leave them to be sheep without a shepherd when the snow shuts out the sky. Let us show them we have not forgotten the constancy, the faith, and the hope that is the Irish. Thank you.